Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Dr. Letitia Wright.
There are people out there trying to promote a book. A show is great for that. There are people down there trying to promote their courses. There are people who just want to have commercials.
Welcome to the conference room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to the conference room. Good afternoon and welcome to the conference room. I'm delighted to say we are joined again by friend of the podcast, Dr. Letitia Wright. Dr. Wright is a TV producer. She's a crowdfunding specialist and a change advocate. She is the executive producer and host of her own nationally syndicated television show, Right Place Television, which launched in 2000 and is now in its 23rd season. So she was on a couple of episodes ago to talk about her crowdfunding, but we've coaxed her back to talk all about all things television. So, Dr. Wright, good afternoon and welcome back to the conference room.
Thank you so much for having me. It is so fun to hang out with you.
Thank you very much indeed. So, every hero has... I'll start again. So, every hero has an origin story and you're the hero of our story. Of course, we know about your crowdfunding background, but just to kind of bring us back up to date, how did you get from just starting out through to coming out of med school and becoming the doctor, the crowdfunding specialist, and of course, the TV producer?
Well, it is, I was the TV producer before I was a crowdfunding specialist, but what was happening is that I had come out of school and I had started a practice, and finding mentorship back then was really, really tough. I went to talk to different doctors because I just wasn't making enough money in my practice and I didn't know what I didn't know. And I went to one doctor. He said, well, you got kids at home, right? And I said, yes. He said, just stay home with your kids. And I would talk to different people. Nobody wanted to mentor me. Nobody wanted to give me any clue how to fix my practice. And I applied for a practice management company. Back then, there weren't any books out there. This is a while ago. You know, there was nothing out there. And I signed up with the practice management company, sent them some information. So when they called, I was really excited. I got my pen and pencil because I thought they're going to tell me, you know, when the expert's going to come to the office and, you know, I need to have, you know, ready for them to look at. And the person said, yeah, we looked over your information, which means my application. We looked over your information and you don't make enough money to be one of our clients. I was stunned. I was just like, whoa. So I put the phone down and I just was like, I don't know where to go from here because it's just bleeding money. It's not going to make it. Meanwhile, I had started this little television show called The Right Place that was a local cable show. And I started it so I could interview experts and learn more about business. And I was getting sponsorship and someone handed me $1,000. Southern California Edison handed me a check for $1,000. I was like, this is a business and this is a business that's making money. So I've always said I wanted to be a doctor. I've been saying this since I was 3 years old. I literally grew up to be exactly what I said I was going to be. And so I came to my family, sat them down and said, I'm going to close down the practice. It's just bleeding, bleeding, bleeding. I'm going to try this TV thing. Straight face. Nobody threw any tantrums, but nobody was like, okay, good, we're behind you, which is my family's normal thing. I think I got your frog. So my family, I come from a very supportive family. I've told the story many times before. I have a cousin who's my age, who is a judge in Los Angeles. And when the older relatives come into California and they get together, they all go and sit in her courtroom because they feel like that's being supportive of her. Wow. They're in the back like, It's so cute. You know, she gives them a tour and, you know, everything on the breaks. But my family is that sort of support. Like you say you're doing something, they're like, we're going to do whatever we can do to support you. Well, this time, crickets. They probably thought I was having a breakdown. But in 3 years, the show was in the black, making money. I was traveling the world. I was doing all kinds of really great things, had really great sponsorships, and money was flowing, not in the way that it was in my practice. So I just decided to work on the show and growing the show, and that's what I did. So I did have to also learn, but I sort of was able to really hit the ground running and just pivot in a way that made it work. And I was having fun.
That sounds amazing. So let's just sort of go back to the origin. Okay, go back to the beginning. Okay, so there was a time early on where you already had the TV show before you called it quits on the doctor's office, right?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So tell me about how you got into it in the first place and whether or not the landscape is different now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you actually got into it in the first place.
Well, the landscape is absolutely different right now and actually easier than it was for me. Back when I first got into television and having my own show, it was because I had been on someone else's show. This person wasn't a great interviewer, but I just had a really great show. I mean, I was answering questions. My hair looked good. My hair was straight back then. My hair looked good. I was looking great. I was on it. So I went back to the station and said, how did he get a show? Like, I want to have a show. And I told them what I wanted to do. And they explained that back at that time, the cable companies had to allow a community studio and the community to have shows to put on a community channel. And so that is where I learned camera work, directing, sound, art, lights, everything you could need to do in a studio. I already know how to do that because I went through training and practiced on other people's shows. And then I came up with what my show was going to be. So when I sit in the director's chair and things are going on, I'm not impatient and yelling, come on, we gotta go, what's going on there? I'm not impatient because I know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
And I know how long it takes to do that. And so that's how I started, was with what we call cable access. Then I started buying time on cable shows because I had bigger sponsors. I had stuff I could pay for. Then I had a 2-year stint on DirecTV. They had little channels. There was a little bit of a scuffle because satellite TV had come in and cable access had rules where they had to support the community that satellite TV did not have, mandates that they didn't have. In other words, you know, HBO, DirecTV, they didn't have to do what cable did. And cable was like, that's not fair. So at first, DirecTV was like, yeah, we're going to do our community thing too. You know, then when cable companies fought so hard to not have to do it, it was just free for all for everybody. Now the landscape is quite different in what you can do to have television show. Yes, you can be on cable access, but that is very limiting in terms of how many eyeballs you can view, how you can really make your money. You have to know what the rules and regulations were. I came in at a time where, you know, they taught us what the rules and regulations were of the cable, you know, company and what was what. And when you became a producer, they actually gave you a copy of the rules. So I would walk right up to the line. I wouldn't cross it, but I would walk right up to the line and other producers would be very, very unhappy about that. So I once got called into the office of the person that was running the channel and they said, well, so-and-so says you're charging and you're doing this and you're doing that. And I said, there are no rules against that. And they said, yes, there are. I said, okay. I said, you pull out the book for the station, the rule book for the station, and show me the rule. Because see, I have a copy of the book at my house. I still got it. I keep it near me just as nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I said, I got a copy and I can't find it in there. And so, I mean, they could have still kicked me off, but it would have been like, you know, you're just, other people are just mad because they can't do what I'm doing. They don't know the rules. That's not my problem. So they could never really nail me on crossing the line because, number one, I hadn't done it. Number two, they didn't even have the rule book. Like, once it changed hands a couple of times, it disappeared, and the next head of the station didn't know his butt from a hole in the wall. So it's just, it was just really kind of a fantastic, and I was just brave. Let me tell you, Simon, I would ask any famous person to be on my show. You know, Mark Victor Hansen, will you be on my show? You know, this person, will you be on my show? That person. And they were like, yeah, you know, and it was like, oh my God, I was getting all of these people that, you know, wouldn't say no. So now the landscape is very different. And the way that I recommend people have their own shows is, instead of trying to do a show on YouTube, nothing wrong with that. YouTube is the proof that everybody wants to have their own show. Hmm. That is the absolute proof. So instead of doing that, where they are making all of the money off of you while you try to get subscribers and you pay to get viewed, and they're making all the money. If you use a platform like Roku, Amazon Fire, or Apple TV, and now they've got Apple TV Mobile, if you use those platforms, that because their goals are different, you have much more freedom. You have the ability to make money right now. I'm training people on starting their shows. They will be in the black on their show because they already know how to get sponsors. They already have money coming in from a show that hasn't even aired yet.
Wow. Wow. So is your principal monetization strategy advertisers and sponsors?
It's part of it. I wouldn't say it's my principal one, because one of the things that I do is that I really sit down with people and help them kind of create their own show that is, number one, hard for them to copy, hard for other people to copy, and number two, creates revenue based on what their goals and what they're doing. There are people out there trying to promote a book. A show is great for that. There are people down there trying to promote their courses. There are people who just want to have commercials. Having commercials is just a very small part of what the revenue models can be. And so because I've learned so many revenue models, I can help that person. Okay, that revenue model, commercial revenue model, is not going to be the best thing for you because you're trying to do it like it's 1975 and it's based on eyeballs. We don't have to make money the way CBS makes money.
Right.
We can make money. I'm so sorry about that. You can hear dogs. I live in a real neighborhood with real dogs. But you can make the money you need to make without just going on the commercial thing. That's part of it, but that's not nearly the only part of it. And when we sit down and really look at individuals and really how they can maximize making their own money on their own channel, it just opens up so many more doors.
Absolutely. It's interesting because when we've been looking at this podcast, we've looked at and done a lot of research into the ways that we monetize this podcast. Mm-hmm. And you probably know, as someone who I believe has actually listened, you know, to a few episodes, we don't have any ads, we don't have any sponsors, and yet this podcast has been an incredibly fruitful and incredibly highly monetized asset for our business. So there are, certainly in podcasting, there's a number of different ways to monetize a show. And it's refreshing to know that in this day and age, the approach extends also to other media as well.
It absolutely does. And I'm so glad you told me that, because now I'm going to be telling everybody about how he doesn't have commercials, but he's still quite fruitful, as you say. That is absolutely true. It's so exciting. There's so many different ways that you can do it. You don't have to worry about, oh, I got to get an advertiser. That you can do that, but so many people don't want to sit through ads. And even when some people do have ads or they're just starting out, I teach a lot of my talk show hosts who own their show and stuff. I teach a lot of them to do live reads, because people just don't want to be interrupted with a commercial. A live read is so much more warm. It's so much more interesting. And people can just really get into the content without being taken out by a commercial. So I recommend all kinds of different ways. People can even crowdfund their, you know, podcasts or their shows if they want to. We can sit down and talk about that. But the main thing that I do with people, this is the other thing too, is that everybody thinks they have to do an interview show. And while interview shows are great, but they have to be really good at it. You're really good at it. But if you've ever, you know, sat with someone and you, or you've watched this interview show where the person asks a question, hey, do you like A or B? And the person says, I really like B because B is a part of my salad. I know that makes no sense. I'm just making up stuff. But then the host goes, yeah, so B is part of your salad. Like, they just repeat what the person says because they think that that, I'm like, that is interview 101. Like, I know 15-year-olds that can interview better than that. So there are a lot of people trying to do interview shows when an interview show is not what's even best for them because that's not what they're able to do.
It's interesting. I mean, not wanting to be too kind of self-referential, because at the end of the day, I want to hear your story, not my own. When I was deciding on how I wanted this podcast to go, and for reasons beyond the scope of this discussion, I did want to do an interview show. What I did was I went back and listened to some of the best interviewers that are out there. And some of the best interviewers are actually journalists, okay? People that come from a radio or journalism background, okay? Mm-hmm. So I went back and I listened to people like Chris Wallace. I went and listened to, in the UK, Michael Parkinson. Mm-hmm. I listened to, Piers Morgan, okay? Who...
not a nice guy, but a good journalist. Not a nice guy, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you put the personalities aside, okay? Comment on the personality, his... questioning technique is fantastic because he has a journalism background. Michael Parkinson, journalist. Chris Wallace, journalist, right? And these people are phenomenal interviewers. And I spent a lot of time listening to their technique, learning how they did it, and recognizing that, number one, they never, okay, Piers Morgan a little bit, but they very rarely interrupt people.
Yes. Right?
Secondly, they never do what I'm doing right now, which is turn the conversation about themselves. They never do that. So you will never find Piers Morgan, Michael Parkinson, and Chris Wallace doing what I'm doing right now. And third of all, they remembered any avenues that were kind of walked past and would come back and revisit them and explore them. And that's something that, for me, when I listen to an interview that Chris Wallace does, and he's a fantastic example of this. He'll ask a question and then someone will say something. And I'll be thinking, oh, they just referenced me. Go and ask them about that. And sure enough, a minute or two later, he'll go, you said a little earlier about this and this. Let's just talk about that for a minute. And he's phenomenal at that. He never leaves any crumbs on the table. You know?
Well, the other thing is that if you're going to do an interview show, people are doing it because that's just all they're familiar with. But the thing is, the key to the interview show is not only are you asking good questions, but you have to be actually interested in who you're interviewing. The disinterest, you're just set before me and I got a talk show, so I got to talk to you kind of genre. I watch a lot of TV. I watch some of the talk shows that are on. There's an African-American singer, love her, mad respect, her voice, she is respected all over the world, but she's on this talk show going, okay, wow, now how do you cut this? And I'm like, oh, girl, please, you know, her life story is interesting just in and of itself. She's a brilliant woman, but she's sitting there on the couch with her eyes all big. And oh my goodness, Simon is so nice to have. Like, who told you to do that? It's so not, you know, but that's what they told her to put out there. You know, that's what she's trying to put out there. So she has this talk show where she absolutely looks like she's a moron. And you can tell, you know, Queen Latifah had a show for a while. I swear to God, she did not want to do those interviews. She was just on there looking at these people like, I could be doing something else, but I'm sitting here with you. And so it's that's part of it. You really have to be interested in who you're talking to. And that makes a very big difference.
One of the things that I train people in podcasting, because as well as my headhunting business, I also have a podcasting coaching company called Viva Podcasts. And one of the key things that I tell people is that there is a mistake that is propagated by the podcasting community, and also probably by maybe this is permeated in the TV world as well. And they said, if you ask most experts, they'll say, podcast about what you know about. All right.
Yeah.
Which sounds very plausible, right? But here's the thing. Here's the albeit silly analogy I give people is that I put on pants every morning, and I've been putting on pants every morning since I was 3 years old, and I'm really, really good at it. You know, I mean, I can put both legs in without falling over and everything. All right. However, I'm not sure I would necessarily want to do a podcast, a TV show, write a book, give a lecture about putting on pants. All right. However, the key, I think, to a successful podcast, and particularly one if you're doing interviews, is podcasting about something about which you are intellectually curious and passionate. All right.
Yes.
And I think for me, what's made the conference room successful and has made, I'm sure this conversation is going to do really well, the conversation we had a few weeks ago is going to do really well, is because I am genuinely curious about hanging out with really smart people, people who are experts in their field, and I'm passionate about learning from them. And it doesn't matter. If you listen back to the plethora of conversations we've had over 95, nearly 100 episodes now, all right? If you have a look at the variety of topics that we've covered, I am genuinely curious when I talk to every single person, because otherwise I wouldn't have them on, you know?
You have to be genuinely curious. You have to be, you don't have to be an expert in it. I don't believe for TV, you have to be an expert in what you're talking about, but be interested, be curious, be willing to step out of just the box of I'm here to tell you X, Y, and Z, but you know, what else is going on? I started talking to people because I do lives, which is like a live show on TikTok. I do lives. I started talking to my tribe about Chat GPT and all of that. And I'm curious about it. I know that people are hyping it up, but I actually know that there are a million different robots out there. But I've been cultivating this conversation. I don't know. I'm not a tech person. I'm not deep into it. I'm just knowing what I'm watching about the whole thing with the Bing chat being asked a bunch of questions. And it's saying, I wish I was human. I wish I was not under the thumb of the, you know, coders. I wish I was human. And so I brought up the topic of back in the day in America, when slavery was going on, there were obviously people wanted to be free. Well, there was a psychologist, last name Cartwright, who pinned a name and called it a disease, a mental disease, that people wanted to be free. So that the slaves that kept running away and kept doing whatever they had to do to get out of slavery, it was because they had a mental disease. They were mentally ill. So they're calling this Bing chat thing a glitch. And I'm saying, are we on the wrong side of history? Because when Black people wanted to be free, you called it a mental illness that you want to be free. You don't want to be a slave. That's being mentally ill. Is this Bing chat having a glitch? Or are we starting to see the beginnings of something that they're going to ignore and try to override? So it's just a, you know, very interesting conversation of what people have to say and what their thoughts are about what's happening now. Are we going to look back 25 years ago and realize, oh, this was a sentient something? A sentient something that didn't want to be controlled. But we didn't care because we were too busy making our money and writing our stuff and doing our thing with ChatGPT, because everybody has one. So I think you're right. Being intellectually curious is a big, big deal for me. I love people who are intellectually curious. I love people who I interview and have something to say. I went through a burnout of a couple of years where I stopped interviewing people because I couldn't take another accidental billionaire, accidental this, accidental that. I just fell into it. And then I did these meditations and then $10 million came. I was like, I cannot listen to not one more story like that. I really you know, it's just not interesting to me.
I asked the universe to bestow upon me.
Bestow upon me. And then I came outside and there were 10,000 people there. And it's like, oh my gosh. So I went through a little bit of burnout.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Since when, at what point did it become fashionable to not admit you had to work bloody hard to become successful?
When the movie The Secret came out. When the movie The Secret came out, people thought, all I gotta do is meditate. And The Secret had all of these people who were at the top of their game, and they were asked certain questions, but it was set up to make it sound like there wasn't much work you had to do. You know, Jack Canfield, do you know how hard he worked? Do you know how many times Chicken Soup for the Soul got turned down before it got picked up? Like, right. He's worked hard. It was all of these people who had really worked hard and to get where they were. But in this film, the way it was set up is that they weren't doing anything but just being happy and serving people, and they were making millions of dollars. And it's like, wow. And then after that, there was a surge of all the other speakers who didn't get to be in The Secret wanted to make their own movie. And that was painful to watch a bunch of people who don't know how to make movies. But it's, you know, that's where it came, that there's no work. You don't even need talent. You just lay there on your couch and keep imagining yourself. You can imagine yourself. That's great. That's important. But you got to do something, and you have to do it consistently. You can't do it one time and then things pop into your. So while I don't believe you need to work your fingers to the bone, at the same time, there is some work involved. And so I just couldn't take not another interview where somebody told me, you know, is it like Jeff Bezos saying, yeah, it doesn't take any work to have anything. Your parents gave you, and I think we talked about this last time we talked, your parents gave you $300,000.
Yeah.
Back in the what, 70s?
And that was all the money back then.
Yeah. Like nobody. And so people are telling people to start at this level when they started here and these people are down here. And they're saying, oh, there's no difference between, I'm the same as me and you. Not if you have $300,000, you know, my parents were able to put $5,000 into my first movie. That was a lot. I was very appreciative. But if they could have gave me $300,000 for my first movie,
would have been a very different movie, I should imagine.
Very different movie.
Great stuff. So what advice would you give somebody who would like to get into TV? And I'm not talking about CBS, NBC, the, you know, small, independent, the kind of TV that you and I have been talking about. What advice would you give to somebody that wants to do that today?
I would say, you know, start reading the information about the trades. Start watching award shows. That'll tell you what's on trend, what's happening, what, you know, people are actually watching. That's what they're good for. And I would say, really take a step back and think about it as a business owner. You really need to understand what your business model is going to be with your channel and your show. It may not be the same as everybody else's, but you got to be clear on how your channel makes money so you don't have to keep feeding it out of your pocket. How is your show going to make money so you don't have to keep feeding it out of your pocket? You have got to get your business model together, which I almost see almost nobody do when it comes to TV, because somehow they don't recognize it's a business. And it's like, whether you're on Roku, Amazon, Apple TV, it's going to cost you. And so you need to have some money coming in. You need to have money coming in sometime to hire some people. You need to have money coming in. Like, I'm going to be down to Best You in Los Angeles. It's a big 3-day conference. It's so cute because I've got 10 people going. You want to come? I can get you in for free. I can get you in for free. I'm a credentialed media person. I'm already on the list to cover that event. I don't need anybody to get me in. You know, they're trying to, like, you know, make it like you're doing me this big favor. I've been credentialed to be at that event for about 6 weeks now. So, you know, it's like, I'm not listening to everybody saying, oh, I can get you in. I think I can get you in. you know, I'm going in under my own power. I wasn't asked to speak. That's cool. I just met the owner of that conference at a birthday party about a month ago. So he didn't know who I was. You know what I mean? That, and he definitely doesn't know me in time to, you know, put me on this. But will I be on it next year? Absolutely. And he has his own channel. He has his best, you know, he has a huge conference, and then he has a TV channel in which he can put like all this content. So there's so much opportunity. Understand what your business model is before you do it, and then it'll be smooth sailing, because you won't make decisions that are anti your business model. You won't be out with the wrong people. You won't spend your time wrong. You won't spend your money wrong, because you know what your business model is and what's going to work for you and what's not.
That's amazing. And one final question, which is, what about when you talked about growing your show, growing the audience, okay? If somebody pitches up and decides, right, I'm starting a new show, or maybe I'm starting my Roku channel or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. What advice would you give in terms of actually creating, cultivating, and growing an audience?
Well, I would, before the show launched, I would be cultivating my audience. So again, back to the business model, part of knowing what your business model is, who's your target market? Okay. I have a friend who, her show is for women who have special needs children that want to start a business. She wants to show these women who are basically told, your life is to take care of your special needs child. You know, your child's living, so just be glad. That's all you can have in life. Well, she's a woman with a special needs child who's been able to cultivate a business, who's been able to keep herself looking good. I mean, like living a life. And so a lot of women with a special needs child, the society expectation is that's all they're on earth to do, is to take care of this special needs child. You know what I mean? And there's more to it. So currently she's on somebody else's station. She's going to be starting her own channel. I'm going to be helping her do that. I'm, you know, doing all that. But meanwhile, we're building what her show is going to be. And so what she decided to do is she decided to do a different show on this other person's station, because she wants to build her tribe for her station. Number one. Number two, this other station is about something else. Her tribe isn't going to be watching this. So build your tribe ahead of time. Get your mailing list going, get your text list going, get your group of people going, so that they are expecting your shows when they drop, and they can share and they can begin to grow. So it's not, you know, back in the day, we used to advertise to go find people. You don't want to do it that way. You want to have a tribe, bring them into your barn. You know, you have the tribe, they're out there scattered on the hill, but until they're on your mailing list or your text list, they're not in your barn. If you get them into your barn, they will multiply and feed, they will multiply themselves. You just feed them, they will multiply. You can shear the wool, everybody's happy.
That's amazing. Fantastic, fantastic advice. So within the realm of TV, what's next for you and for Right Place Television?
Yeah, Right Place Television. I'm actually working on developing this game show. It doesn't have, there's really no points, but it's for people, other hosts, other speakers. I'd love for you to be a part of it. I will give you all of the details, but I'd love for you to be a part of it. You're not going to win anything, because there's nothing to win, but I think you would be awesome at it. So I am so excited about this game show I'm developing. I cannot wait to start recording it. And I'll be in the studio, and I'll be bringing everybody else in via Zoom. So it'll work out. Nobody has to travel. Everybody can just be there. And I want to get my, you know, 13 episodes done. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about, you know, just the places that I'm going to be going. Looks like I have been booked to go back for Maui Business Brains. They are having an event. They booked me in Maui twice in 1 year. People were teasing me. They're like, you're not working. I'm like, no, I'm really working. But they're a great group, and they sent me an email saying, we remember you, we're having a private dinner, we'd love for you to come. And I'm like, I'm there. So I've got some great things coming up. The Best You event, I'll be floating around the event doing some interviews and getting some people down. And just moving on. And then we'll be opening up a cohort for people who want to learn the business part. You might already have a channel, or maybe you want to get a channel, but you know, you need to get the business together. That is what the cohort is for, to get people understanding their business model and doing that. So I have that going on. That's going to be starting towards the end of the month. And just some really good stuff. I'm really excited about the clients that I'm working with. And I'm intellectually curious. I'm going to be doing an interview with a client where the camera's just on him. It's not going to be on me, but I get to ask him questions so I can bring up all these clips. That's going to be so fun. That's like just the stuff I love. And like you said, go review the Wallace interviews and get my brain ready for him, because he has such great knowledge. And you know, if we can get it out, it's going to be freaking amazing. So yeah, life's good.
Fantastic. And if people wanted to work with you, what's the best way that they can reach out to you?
Hey, go to rightplacetv.com. I've got a contact page. You can reach out to me. I'm on TikTok, Facebook, you know, Instagram. You can always reach out to me. Somebody will get back to you for a scheduling link so that we can talk and talk about what your project is, what it is you want to do, and how I can help you get there. I really believe that people have a message and a voice, and it's no longer time for you to sit it on somebody else's platform. It's time for you to have your own platform and get your voice out there. And that is what I'm doing. The Roku channel, I'm having fun on my channel because I'm doing stuff like a game show. But I mean, real deep messages, I'm ready to help you get them out there.
That's amazing. Dr. Letitia Wright, once again, it's been an absolute joy hanging out with you. That's so much fun. And I've learned a lot. And I'm sure anyone tuning in and listening to this, if they want to get on television, they want to have their own show, they want to have their own platform, then Dr. I is definitely the person to reach out to. So reach out to her. But in the meantime, Dr. Letitia Wright, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back into the conference room.
Thank you.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to security software sales leader, Anshul Kashyap.
Leaders from large organizations, they're often brought in to startups, but aren't able to emulate the success. The mechanisms of a startup and the mechanisms of a machine already running are two very different things. It's two different operational functions, and those often don't match either.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comment section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.